Zimmer and Hammer, we are glad you're with us this morning. A little chilly outside. Let's see the wag. What would the weather in Washington be typically this time of year, Simmer? You have lived down there for many, many years. Mid-January.
Yeah, I'll go 40 degrees.
Cherry blossom's not out yet.
No. But you don't really get much of a winter. And yeah, I'm going to go 40 degrees.
All right. So today is inauguration day down in the United States. Big day as Joe Biden gets sworn in at noon today as 46. He is the 46th U.S. president.
83 years old? Right?
He's an old-looking dude.
I'm sorry, 78. Yes, 78. Colin Powell was on the other day. He's 83 years old.
Yes.
And by my calculation, I hope I'm right, JR, by reverse weather, I'm going to go 5 degrees Celsius. That's what I'm going to say, around that. Hey?
What's the formula again?
Well, doubling that 30. So that was classic. I went slow on the approach on that one.
Yes.
So
well done on that one. Yeah. Well done indeed.
Right. And for his age, I'm not trying to meet, you're a little chilly there.
Got his foot in a walking boot still. He broke his foot, right?
Yeah.
Biden? A couple weeks ago?
Yeah,
weeks ago?
I don't know. He'd be on one of those little carriages there coming down, doing the
you
walk.
You know what I want to see?
Doing the walk where you do the one knee with the little scooter.
No, I know what I want to see. Remember when Celine Dion got married in a Las Vegas hotel and she was brought in by this kind of Knights of Arabia thing where she was up on she had the guys and then she was on the table type thingy.
Yeah.
Remember that?
Yeah.
And that's what I want to see.
They can't do that.
No.
Because if he falls, you're looking VP, step on up. Here we go.
Multiple broken bones.
He's one hip away from being
right
put
away.
Down.
Interesting with everything that's going around, you saw the violence of 2 weeks ago and all the talk with 25,000 National Guard troops, etc., they decided to go ahead with an outside event. You know, security, as they said, has never been tighter in Washington this year, but... Yeah. It is symbolic that they do it outside in front of the Capitol building, inside.
Yeah.
Want to, project strength and all that other stuff. But, it was interesting. You just juxtapose what we see today with all the bunting and the banners and all the pomp and circumstance. There won't be a lot of people there. It was 2 weeks ago today.
Yeah.
The mayhem on those exact stairs.
Yeah.
Right was happening.
Yeah. No. And using the scaffolding. One of the funnier clips on the whole thing was there was the ability to just walk up the stairs, JR. But how many of those guys wanted photo ops where it looked like they were scaling the wall?
Right.
And the one guy that gets halfway up, he goes down.
He went down hard.
That wasn't actually funny. It was funny.
When you think about who did it, absolutely is funny. All right. Yeah. Pierre McGuire will join us in 1 hour. For now, we'll talk all things hockey. And then after 9, we're going to hook up with Keegan Matheson, who covers the Blue Jays for MLB.com. Keegan has been a regular contributor here to TSN 1200 over the years, talking Blue Jays. We're looking forward to having him on to talk about the big free agent signing that has reportedly happened. Again, until he has a physical this morning, we won't get anything official from the team. But George Springer, World Series MVP for the Cheatin' Houston Astros in 2017. Has reportedly signed a six-year, $150 million deal with the Toronto Blue Jays.
Yeah, and JR, to some extent, we've lived it, although I still think a little different with hockey. But imagine for someone like Keegan, you're covering the Jays there, and you had a couple of runs to the playoffs, but all of a sudden it goes quiet, and there's that feeling always in the American League East, right? If you're not one of the big boys, and this goes back to the 90s, where all of a sudden Clemens showed up, you always felt like it was Red Sox and Yankees, right? And no matter what you do, you're going to be the Jays, you're going to be third in your own division. With the way this sets up right now, boy, the excitement for that market. And, hey, a lot of competition with the Raptors. Always a lot of competition with the Leafs. Has to have baseball people really excited. And obviously the interest level gonna skyrocket.
Yeah. The problem is going to be, in all likelihood, we'll see how it plays itself out. I just don't foresee it that the Blue Jays are going to be able to start the season at home this year. I would, as things sit right now, would have to think that... They are probably going to start the season in Buffalo again. Maybe one of those things where maybe this year they're able to play half a season at home.
Yeah, for sure.
But we'll see. Anyway, we'll talk to Keegan Matheson coming up after 9 o'clock. 7:17, congratulations goes to Dave Abson. Nice job, Dave. Dave's not here. Dave was. And we apologize for everybody that phoned. And we had an issue with the phones this morning. Hammer, what'd you have to do there? You had to discombobulate.
I had a completely power cycle our phone system. You couldn't do anything. It was frozen.
Yeah, we were trying to answer the phones, and I don't know what I've done with line one, but I was trying to help out, and line one.
Oh, you put line one on the air.
Oh, did I? Okay. Well, anyway, can you fix that for me?
Would you mind?
Well,
yeah.
I congratulate Dave Abson. Dave was lucky caller number 15. And Dave, congratulations. You have scored yourself a $150 $100 gift certificate to Gabriel Pizza for their big game party and contest that's happening with us for big game number 55, the Super Bowl in Tampa on Sunday, February the 7th. Your next chance to win comes up this afternoon on the drive between 2 and 6 o'clock with Steve Lloyd and Lee Versage. We're giving away 55 of these. Catch the numbers there. 55 of these $100 gift certificates to Gabriel Pizza.
Yeah, and would be pretty cool, JR, if the old Tampa Bay Bucks make it in. They'd be the first team to ever host a Super Bowl and actually play in it. Hey?
Yeah, and they and Tampa has had. I'm not sure where they're at as far as the number of people they're allowed. They have had fans. Well, it's Florida.
Yeah,
Florida is one of the few places allowing people into their buildings, but they have had fans at games. So I'm not sure what capacity is going to be at the Super Bowl. It's not going to be a full house. But they are going to have several thousand fans.
Yeah, and even the allocation of it, guys, from a fan standpoint, I would have to think from a league standpoint that almost all that's going to the big wigs and to the sponsors, right?
Yeah, and if they go. What do we got for capacity?
It's going to be capped at 13,000.
13,000
fans, so about 20%. Capacity.
I swear, watching the Chiefs game, guys, first of all, from the field level, I initially thought, oh my God, it looks like the stadium's almost full. Then they showed an aerial of it, and it certainly wasn't, but that ended up being a decent home atmosphere for the Kansas City Chiefs past weekend.
By the way, only Arizona, well, Dallas is allowing fans. The Stars have not played in a game yet, but in the NHL, only two NHL rinks are open to fans right now. Arizona, which played its first two games at home, and now Florida, which has just played its two first home games.
Yeah.
In Arizona, they averaged 2,300 fans over the two games.
Yeah.
In Florida, 4,100 at the season opener. Mm. And I read it earlier. I think it was 3,400 at the game last night with the Blackhawks. So,
and both of them looked like normal crowd. And they were
the joke was there.
They were allowed
to deliver it.
They were allowed to have 7,000, but only 2,300 showed up. Like, of all the markets, guys, honestly, like, all the markets in the NHL that somehow are allowed to have fans. And the clips of the Florida game last night, you're like, oh, yeah, that's normal.
Yeah.
That's normal. Just a few people behind the bench.
I've never been to a game in Florida before, but it's always, and everybody tells me, oh, it's always way more people up top, you know, so, because there's neverbody in the lower bowl, ever. Like, they show the shot of the benches across the ice from where the center ice camera is.
Yeah.
And there's literally five people sitting in a section.
That's your worst one, right? Yeah. I mean, at least fill up that part of it. I've been to many a game there. First of all, a tad late all the time because best outlet shopping in the country, right across there, Sawgrass. Get over there, get your stuff, and get it into the car. It's a great building to watch a game in, JR, but the upper bowl where you go to the press box, like, bring your Canada Goose coat because it's swirling there. It's it's cold.
Do they keep the people who... you know, as I said, they announce crowds of, 10 or 12. Do they keep people who are in the, I don't know if that's the 300 level?
Yeah.
Do they keep them up there and say, you can't go down below?
Well, they must because, you know, as I said, why wouldn't you? And even from a marketing standpoint, you'd want to kind of look like it's full, but they must. Most times I would have been there as in a press box, but you're trying to restrict that for the 10 or 15 people that actually spent the money and everybody up top. You know, if you fill up for $50, you get a free Panthers ticket. That's where they're sitting. So you don't want the free gas people sitting next to the people that actually paid to get into the game.
No, that's problematic to be sure. All right. Here in Ottawa last night, I don't know if a heartbreaker is the right way to describe it for the Sens. Certainly one that got away. They were the better team on the night last night, but at the end of the night, they skate away with only 1 point in a 4-3 overtime loss to the Winnipeg Jets. We'll talk about the end in just a second, but there were some things to celebrate if you're a Sens fan, including for this guy.
Back to the point again. Shabbat gets to the front. Dadnoff heals the puck. Norris with a shot. Knockdown. Second chance. Bouncing puck. They score! Tipped in front.
Well, we'll have to wait for the official call here. The way Josh Norris looked to the skies here, Dean, it might be his as well. First ever in the National Hockey League.
Indeed it was, Gord Wilson. Josh Norris credited with that power play goal. First of his NHL career and kicked off. And I'm not sure whether it was the relief of scoring a goal or whatever. Josh Norris, well, that whole line was good, but he in particular was just flying last night. His night was a good one.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, it didn't end. You always like to score your first NHL goal when your team ends up winning the game, but for him in particular, that was an excellent game.
Yeah, you can celebrate a little louder. At least you got a point, JR, but watching him and Batherson along with Shabbat, a little bit of a triangle on the top of the power play, man, oh man, the confidence of him and Batherson, and Shabbat's always had it, they're just throwing that around lacrosse style. And to me,
what a difference from Saturday, too, right? The power play?
Well, yeah. And night and day. Now, I also wonder kind of the pressure that was being put on them, but whatever. You know, like you said, you've settled it down. you've backed people off. And like I said, I'm watching Josh Norris. I'm like, wow, shades of Adam Oates, which is a reverse on the right side. But Batherson, same thing. You mix in old daddy and a little Chucky action, and that was fun to watch. But I'm just watching him, and for a young player, the way he's able to go forehand, backhand, back people off, go to the point, go through the seam, go down low there. Wow, that is that half-wall quarterback we haven't seen here in Ottawa for a long time as far as a power play guy, probably back to, although Jason Spezza most times was down low, was he not? I mean, that is setting the table on that side, and especially when you got Shabbat in that position. That was fun to watch.
We hear is Josh Norris talking about scoring that first goal.
I mean, obviously I was excited, and to be honest with you, just happy to get it out of the way. But, I mean, I tried not to get too high. I still wanted to, you know, play simple and do my thing. And I thought I had a few good scoring chances, you know, right after that. So just wanted to continue to play well and, you know, not get too high just because it's my first goal.
Yeah. And, and it's not like this guy's been, you know, has played a ton of games, right, and really getting nervous about scoring goal. He played, what, 3 games last year? Didn't score, and then now this is game number 3 of this year. So only 6 games into his career, but he's got a goal, and his old roomie there, Timmy Stützle, who didn't end up playing last night, he got his first goal on Saturday, right? So I guess it's, you know, Chucky probably would have been giving them the gears at home, saying, well, Jimmy Stu's got his there. Josh, when are you getting yours?
Well, you invite him into your bedroom and you show him the plaque on the wall. How you like this? And as far as Norris, I don't even know what kind of shot he really has. I kind of think of him as a playmaker and setting the table.
He scored. You know what? It's funny you bring that up because last year I remember seeing in Belleville where he got the 31 goals. Yeah. I remember there seemed to be, what sticks out in my head was how many goals he scored from that offside on the power play from the dot. Okay. Now, last night was more of a, that was kind of more of a pass that ended up, you know.
Were they one-timers or more just
slinging
it? Yeah,
there were some one-timers in there. Yeah, okay. But, you know, it's not, I don't think he has an overpowering shot, but I remember him scoring some goals from that spot.
Yeah. And I actually, last night watching, and I was going to unveil it on the show here today, never been used. I'm actually dubbing them as the kid line.
Really? Yeah. Wow, you went a long way for that one.
But that was fun. If you're a hockey fan, and first of all, you're out playing somebody, like, thoroughly, which we haven't seen in recent years with the Ottawa Senators, but that's worth the price of admission. And I'm not saying that you have to dress the entire formant into brown and everything else, but I just really hope J.R. lost in the shuffle this, which I'm assuming it's not. But, man, you're going to lose 6-5 on a nightly basis with a bunch of young players versus some plugs? I mean, show me that all night long. Every time they stepped on the ice, there's just such an energy. We've seen it with Tkachuk, but to now watch Batherson and then Norris, we're kind of worried after a couple of games against the Leafs. You're like, wow, that's going to be a line that you hope is together for a long time. And it was just a treat to watch last night.
They had collectively, the three of them, had 20 shots in the game. The Sens had 41. They had 20 shots. That one line, which dominated possession when they were out there 5-on-5. In fact, you know, if you're into analytics at all, Josh Norris ends up with a Corsi, which is essentially it's stuff that you generate versus your opponent.
He's
at 78% on the night. Tkachuk was at 70%, and Batherson was at 69%.
Yeah, that's awesome.
That is utterly dominant when they were out there for the game last night. So that was the good news. The play of that line was really, really good. That's got people fired up. That's what people want to see.
Yeah.
Again, in this season,
in which guys
expectations
commit.
Are very low,
you're
all about the young guys. And how are the young guys looking?
Yeah.
And last night, the young guys looked really good. And then there was how this game ended for the Ottawa Senators, which is a very passive last 5 minutes in which they allowed the Jets to come at them, and then they pulled the goalie, and then you could just almost feel it coming, right? Nobody's really challenging. I don't know if that's the plan, but eventually Morrissey takes the shot. Wheeler ends up getting credited at the end of the day for the tip-in at the side of the net, and then we go to overtime, and then we see the Nikolai Ehlers pulling away from old Artie Party, Artie Anisimov, and the Ehlers is fast. I don't want to make it all on Anisimov, is slacking off on the back check or whatever.
Just
the fact that he's out there as one of the six forwards in overtime is just, it's I don't know what it is. I don't know. I don't understand it.
Yeah.
I do not understand why the guy who was a scratch the last game, who centers your fourth line and played the second least amount of minutes at forward for you last night. Artem Anisimov is one of your first choices off the bench in overtime.
Yeah, I don't even understand why he's dressed, and I don't think he's slacking off, JR. He's just not a very fast player. I mean, there's no theory or understanding of for a guy, like I said, this would be the case of, and I'm not even, you know, I'm not joking. I would quite simply, as a manager, say, hey, enough of this. First of all, I want White in, and if he's not, I'm going to wave him through and send him to Belleville. There's no reason for him to take up ice time, a single minute of ice time. And then for your coach to throw him out in overtime is absolutely perplexing.
Yeah. Artem Anisimov, by the way, his, if you care about analytics, his possession time yesterday or percentage was 31%. Second lowest on the team. Only Nick Paul had a worse night last night. So it's not like Artem Anisimov was having himself a night last night. And I don't make it all about Anisimov.
No.
I think what
no.
we questioned yeah. in the first hour and what a lot of fans questioned, I listened to part of the post-game show last night, what we're getting a lot of feedback this morning as well, is for fans, this is just, it's about player usage.
Yeah.
It's about,
yeah.
this is how many messages we've seen this morning. This is reminding me of Guy Boucher.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, he's given a bunch of veteran players. What's yeah. a coach going to do if it's a tie in his mind as to who's going to play?
Yeah.
You're always going to defer to the veteran players.
Yeah.
And so we're just laying it out there right now that this is the way the fans are feeling about things, that this is taking
yeah.
on shades of Guy Boucher.
Yeah, and again, I couldn't understand even before Galchenyuk had to go in for Stützle why another minute's going to be, whether it's Coburn or Riley, why you're going to take that for Wolanin, and why White wouldn't end up being in the lineup. And as far as building lineups, I don't mind once in a while, Jer. As I said, any time I've worked for, a coach likes a certain player. But the lengths that they've gone with Guy Boucher now in this case, where, okay, when Connor Brown came over and then Zaitsev, who first of all is playing terrific hockey, Connor Brown all day long. Coach likes him. He's had him. I understand it. I get to a summer, and if you want to bring Austin Watson, who I thought has been okay, I'm a little concerned about the term of the contract, young players, but then you start bringing in the next foot soldier and the next guy. Man, as management, as I said before, don't hand jobs, and they keep talking about, you know, earning it and everything else, but don't create roadblocks for your younger players. And like I said, the simple one is, doesn't have to be Formanton to Logan Brown to Abramov to anybody else, but the two that are sitting there that are one-way contracts between White and Willan, and like I said, that flat out is bad management that you're allowing your coach to end up doing that on a nightly basis.
So, yeah, and that's the, and listen, we get lots of feedback on Colin White, you know, that, and listen, the contract is the contract. They gave him the contract. It's 6 years. It's almost $5 million a year. Was his production, did his production live up to it in year one? No, not at all. We haven't seen, you know, we never saw any of training camp, so
yeah,
we can't
yeah.
really, other than the coach in the first week said, always made a point to say he was one of the standouts of practice.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, by the end of week two, when they were ready to play games, he was on the scratch list,
yeah,
and now
yeah.
has been scratched two of the first three games.
Yeah.
Listen, if, at this point, if Colin White cannot be trusted, cannot be outplaying what we see of Artem Anisimov, then this is a worse situation than I thought.
Yeah, for
like,
sure.
This is, yeah. Colin White is, maybe he's untradeable anyway, but
yeah.
what you're telling yeah. the rest of the NHL, correct me if I'm wrong, Simmer, right now, is Colin White is a terrible hockey player because
yeah.
he can't even beat out Artem Anisimov
yeah.
to skate on the fourth line of the Ottawa Senators.
Or even
if he
struggles on the draws, that even yeah. on Paquette, he can't end up playing. No, it is strange. And I'm only going to go with my simple eye test, JR, and I'm not going to get into D-zone coverage because they don't break down both guys. Quite simply, when White hopped in the other night, I was like, okay, this is fine. I thought his pace was fine. He is quite simply a faster player than Artie Party. He's probably faster than Tierney right now. You get into discussions, he's probably faster than Stepan. And I know speed isn't everything, but as a young player, if he can skate and he's willing to work hard, but like I said, man, behind the scenes, who the hell knows what's going on? But like I said, all based on the information I have with both of those players, the only way you're going to learn is get reps. And I also think when you watch that top line right now and you mix in Timmy Stützle, you get White and Wolanin in there, the young guys just start feeding off of each other's energy, right? You're trying to build a core here. You're trying to build a feeling on a night like last night where you're thoroughly outplaying Winnipeg. I want the other young players to experience this and start feeling like, wow, here, you know what? We can actually compete against some of the big boys in the Canadian division.
Here is DJ Smith on our post-game show on TSN 1200 talking about how the Sens finished last night's game.
We made a lot of young mistakes. We're racing around trying to score rather than defend. And, you know, that's a learning lesson tonight. We lose a point and we give a valuable point to them. You got to close games out like that.
So was there a shift in particular? Because I was going back in my mind when I heard him make that comment.
Yeah.
And I'm assuming he's talking about before the tying goal is scored with a buck 17 to go,
yeah,
when he's
yeah.
talking about young guys racing around trying to score.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because the only young guys that dressed it forward last night, if he's referencing forward, were the three guys who dominated puck possession the entire game when they were
yeah,
out there.
Yeah.
I don't remember I stand to be corrected here, of Norris, Tkachuk, and Batherson having a shift in the last 5 minutes of the game in which they were totally hemmed in or just making careless mistakes with the puck. Like the other nine guys, and Nick Paul is the fourth youngest guy. He's 25. He's been a pro for four or five years
now. 26 pretty soon.
Yeah, exactly. Like there are no young guys. Like these young mistakes, like there aren't a lot of young guys playing for the Sens. That's the crazy thing.
And on a 6-on-5, when you're hemmed in your own zone, when Wheeler's standing behind all of your defenders, there's not a single young player on your defense, other than if you want to say Thomas Chabot. But I'm also going to say on an $8 million contract, ready to turn 24, he's not a kid. I mean, we talk about him being an elite player. The rest of these guys are supposed to be the stabilizing factor in why Willanda's not in the lineup. So get over this narrative when Timmy Stutz was outside of your top line, and I'll at least lump Chabot in. I'll give you that one. The rest of this crew is a lot of players from other teams and a lot of veteran players. So that narrative of being a young hockey team, they quite simply aren't. That first line, and that's about it.
Yeah.
And also from a goaltending perspective. I mean, for Murray in a game like that, when you're being thoroughly outplayed, there's been enough goals three games in, and he's done some good things, but there's some goals there, and there's some saves, and there's some approaches. And I know it turned into a breakaway in overtime, JR, but get out and get after it. And as far as getting, you know, that power play goal that went to the weak side, boy, did he ever get tangled up and make a very unathletic move. So a little bit of concerns there, but flat out, he's got to be better. I mean, you're paying him big money. He's a two-time Stanley Cup champion and needs some saves.
Right. So if I go through the four Winnipeg goals from last night, so you know, and you're the goalie on the show.
Yeah.
So you thought on the second goal, the Connor power play goal, where it was, you know, he was by himself on the far side.
Yeah.
And he's a goal scorer.
Yeah,
I mean, you're in a small way saying Murray could have played that better?
He absolutely could have played it better. Now, does he make the save? I'm not saying that. But if you watch him, he basically ends up on his ass. He's down playing, which you normally would. You know, you're playing for the stuff. But the way he got tangled up there, you've got to be able to move laterally, get going. No fault on Ehlers on Wheeler. But there's a bit of a trend with him where I understand most goaltenders, your method, JR, is to get to the ice and close things up. When a shot's coming from the point, but there are spots here where, first of all, he's got to get more aggressive and get out. And then I just don't feel like he has a ton of confidence in his hand skills. Like there's pucks that are, you know, squeaking between the elbows on both sides. And there's just little spots there where I don't feel like he's giving himself a chance. If you're going to be not confident in that, JR, well, then you've got to be a little bit more aggressive to get out versus stand on your goal line.
We have heard that he is trying some new things this year after a down year last year. So maybe, and if, you know, that stands to reason that if you're trying some new things, that maybe some stuff that normally, you know, you would shut down, maybe is not happening this year.
Regardless,
I think after three games, I thought, you know, last night was his worst game of the three that he's played.
Yeah.
It was decent, but not great. But I don't think there's any doubt in my mind that Hogberg will play the game tomorrow night.
Yeah, and again, I'll also say, and we should be fair, because we talked last year when Nielsen was here, and we even said with Hogberg early on, you use that term a little bit leaky. I mean, you know, again, it's just three games in, he's trying different things. There's just some goals there from the Thornton goal against Toronto. Then again, yesterday, that I'm starting to see a trend of going in that shouldn't go in for a goaltender of his pedigree.
Yeah. The first goal was the tip-in, right, by Lowry in front.
Yeah.
And that was where Coburn lost a puck battle. Puck goes back to the point. And then I'm trying to remember who was trying to tie up the goal scorer.
Yeah, Lowry.
Lowry.
Yeah.
Did not do a good job of tying him up. That was a tip in front. Anyway, I'm not here to try to defend to Murray. I thought he was just okay last night, not great.
Yeah, no, as I said, and you know, hey, all of this is, again, we're breaking down. It's Canada. It's the National Hockey League. I'm excited to see Hogberg hop in. You know, this is all part of the process. But the part of last night, and again, I guess because it's a loss, but hey, you know, what's really matters, what's going on right now? Well, quite simply, is that first line and Thomas Chabot. That's what really matters big picture, along with the goaltender. I mean, the majority of these other players within, you know, the trade deadline or by next fall aren't even going to be in Ottawa.
So the argument is from people like us and certainly from a lot of fans is we don't care about results this year. Just want to see the future. You want to see the young guys. Yeah. And you know what? If they make a ton of mistakes and they end up in the back of your own net, you know, it's all part of the learning process. Let's find out who can play and who can't.
Why
do you think that the general manager, the coach, the organization is not seeing it the way that everybody else is seeing it?
I really don't know. I don't know. Again.
It's almost like you're getting a free pass here. It's not often that a sports organization, a hometown team, is not having its feet held to the fire regarding wins and losses. Yeah, it's almost like you're getting a freebie this year, and they're turning their back on it.
No. In a normal year where you're a competitive team, last night would have felt like a gut punch. You're like, oh, my God, I can't believe that happened. What you really walked out of was criticizing the coach for the deployment of the players, right? You look at the young players. I don't understand it. Now, this whole theory of, again, you veteran players and we don't want to hand jobs over and you want to create a winning culture. I got enough guys. I'll even put Nick Paul into that now. Seems like a very good 5 or 6 year pro. When I have a Connor Brown and if you brought Stepan in and you signed Dadanov, you mix in Austin Watson, JR, I only need so many. On the back end, okay, how big do you want to be between Coburn and then you got Gabranson and Josh Brown? I need some mobility. I also need some young players. So I understand the balance. I understand that you don't want to end up like a losing culture like the Florida Panthers. But quite simply, I'll tell you something right now. I never have worried about Brady Tkachuk or Thomas Chabot in a sense of Brady Tkachuk doesn't need a bunch of guys around. He is a born leader. He's going to find. And when I go to an ice hockey match and my young players are my best line, how much more leadership do I need around them? Like think about that. Like, I don't need you holding a hand or carrying these guys around. Hey, I want a balance here, and I certainly don't want to just think, hey, it's no big deal if we win or lose. But let's be honest with some of these things that you're plucking into the lineup. It just doesn't make any sense big picture. And this is the fallback that happened in Toronto under Mike Babcock and who DJ Smith worked with. And this is what we're starting to see again. And with Guy Boucher, it was a one-off the first year because as boring as it was, at least they were winning. By year two, you were just like, man, this is some of the worst hockey I've ever watched.
Right. And again, it's a different team from when Boucher took over to where DJ Smith is. Not in terms of what's on the ice right now, but what is to come.
Oh,
right?
For sure.
You know, there are some young players we're told that will be NHLers. But there was lots to celebrate, lots of good stuff last night.
Yeah.
The play of the first line, most certainly. I thought Nikita Zaitsev, again, I thought he kind of fell off as the game went on, but the first half of the game was... He's decisive with the puck, which I gave decisive Zaitsev, which you didn't then pretend to do Decisev, which I thought, there we go.
There was little something last year I was having fun with it. There was a term that I used either on social media and then you grabbed a hold of it right away. So no, I was just having some fun with you. But when you watch him right now, JR, and this is what he did the first year in Toronto, he's a hardworking guy. He skates fairly well. He just flat out is exactly as you just said. On the puck battles right now, he's being decisive. You know, he's getting there. When he gets the puck, he's actually making a play where last year he'd kind of get into a puck battle and most times wouldn't come out with it. But when he did, I mean, he'd never end up making a pass. I think it's been real positive so far the way he's played.
Absolutely. Through three games, he has been better than expected. I thought Galchenyuk last night for a first game showed a lot of get up and go. Scored a real nice goal.
Sure. Yeah.
I don't think that he should come out of the lineup. Anisimov, we've already touched on. I'm not really getting Cedric Paquette while he's in the lineup at this point.
Yeah.
And this is not to say that if a guy comes out, he's going to come out forever.
No.
For goodness sakes, let's be honest with ourselves right now. There are some players in the bottom of this lineup that are easily replaceable with some of the players that are sitting out right now.
Yeah.
There is no reason to be rolling back with some of these guys again tomorrow night.
No, and I really like when you want to talk about kind of the conscience of a team, you know, Stepan's always going to give it, but the combination of Paul mixed in with Tierney and Connor Brown, to me, as Tierney gets more and more comfortable, and actually I thought he even skated better yesterday, JR, like that line right there, that's the conscience of my hockey team. That's my matchup group. I really like the way they played, so... I got to mix in some other pieces. And then, hey, you just get into spots here of not overthinking it and just immersing a couple of more young players and making this all part of the process.
All right, tons of feedback coming in. We'll get into all of that when we come back, most certainly. One that just came in, has anybody spotted Dadanov yet? I thought Dadanov was more noticeable last night for sure. I thought that was his best game.
He was really good on the power play, too.
Yeah, and we were told by the coach heading into it that he was a real good power play player in Florida, and I think we saw evidence. Well, I mean, that whole power play just looked. I don't know what the difference was between Saturday and last night, but whatever it was that they did last night, if it was any different, keep doing that because that worked last night, 2 for 5 on the night.
Yeah, totally agree.
All right, 7:42. Keep the text coming at 12-1200. Tweet at us at TSN 1200. We'll talk more hockey, of course, with Pierre McGuire as well when he joins us after 8. Pierre did the game? He did the Washington-Pittsburgh game last night. Surprise, surprise. Sidney Crosby scored the game winner in overtime as the Penguins got a much-needed win. We'll talk to Pierre coming up in about 25 minutes or so from now as we roll on here for a Wednesday morning. You're listening to Sports Radio TSN 1200. Sens are back on the practice ice at 11:30 this morning. They got a rematch with the Jets coming up tomorrow night, hoping to bounce back from last night's 4-3 overtime loss. Nikolaj Ehlers had the game winner 2 minutes into OT after Winnipeg had tied the game with just over a minute to go on a 6-on-5 with the goalie pulled for Ottawa. Josh Norris, first NHL goal. Alex Galchenyuk, first goal in his first game with the Ottawa Senators. Chris Tierney scored. A little more feedback at 12-1200. The Farmer Bill writes, well, Lannan has to be in. He's got speed. Put him with one of the right side D to work with. That's from Farmer Bill.
Yeah, I agree with you, Farmer Bill. First of all, I think it would end up helping either a Gabranson, a Zaitsev, or certainly a Josh Brown to have a capable puck mover. And more importantly, a 25-year-old who's missed time is on a one-way contract. Let's get him going here. Let's get him in and get him some reps.
Homer Hughes says, speaking of names for the top line, you came up with the kid line, Simmer. Hughes says, what about the Stars and Stripes line? Which, you know, like Brady and Josh Norris are both American, yeah. But Drake Batherson is a dyed-in-the-wool Maritimer.
Born in Fort Wayne, Indiana, though, right?
Okay, I'll take that back. Yeah. Okay.
I think
he grew up in the Canadian hockey system.
Yeah, but so does. But Norris actually grew up in Germany, and Chucky's actually half Canadian. Like for old style Winnipeg Jets fans, I know people were commenting about Matthew Tkachuk and the Brady Tkachuk. They're going to hate them. Like what a dilemma that is when Dad was so beloved by the fan base, right? To watch it, mm-hmm. We're going to have to call it the international line because I'm almost
the UN line, the United Nations.
Yeah, because I think Drake's dad Norm was playing in Fort Wayne when he was born. So these guys are all over the place.
Unsigned believes he has the what happened in overtime, why Anisimov was on. DJ might have yelled, work your ass off, and Anisimov thought he might have heard his name called and jumped on the ice. let's see.
My new favorite player.
From Rob, hey guys, DJ starting to remind me of Boucher. Play the young dudes. Yeah. Get Artie Party, Riley, Paquette, even Stepan. Out of there, that's from Rob. I actually thought that Riley and Zaitsev, I thought played pretty well last night overall.
Yeah.
I thought Riley, and I'm not a huge fan of what I've seen of him in his time, but I think he's been better than Cole. If you're looking for a guy to take out, I would take out Coburn.
Yeah, and I just think he ended up with too much of the same thing, JR. Like I said, this goes back to the old stay-at-home pairings. A little balance there. If you're going to have Gabranson and Brown on the right side, throw in Riley and Willannon and end up doing that. And I also, for Artie, what could happen at times as well, probably DJ Smith or one of the coaches went there to hold him down so he didn't go, and he wasn't tied down. So he thought he was actually getting the nudge to go on the ice.
There has to be some curious explanation for why he was out there in overtime.
The language part, though, and I'm not even joking, it would be interesting when coaches have masks on and when you have guys that are partial in English, there must be some confusion at times. Are they ever saying names or they end up going numbers, right?
I'm not sure. Usually it's a tap on the shoulder. Some of the times, too. Speaking of Eric Gudbranson, wears an A, already has a leadership component with his team. He was on our post-game show here on TSN 1200 talking about how this loss will be one to learn from.
You know, the real travesty is if we don't learn from it. That was pretty blatant. It hurts in your gut. And you know, we've had an opportunity to play them for the next two games, and we got to come out and do that the right way.
There you go. There's Eric Gudbranson, Orleans boy with his thoughts after the game.
Yeah, and there's certain things you have to say in the fine sport of ice hockey or any professional sport after the fact, JR, but I honestly, I need a save, and I don't need the coach to put an Artie Party out. I didn't feel like this was a major meltdown or collapse, guys. Like, hey, mistakes are going to be made. You respect the Winnipeg Jets. You know, they're an absolute stinker. I don't even know what Paul Maurice is thinking waking up this morning. Like, you know, last couple of hockey games here, and this also, I guess, Mr. Liney's just sitting there, and he's just throwing out cash. He's probably putting contract offers under Chevy's door at the hotel. Like, if this doesn't...
This goes up 500 a game.
If this doesn't show my value.
Yeah.
Like, that would be, you know, I think Ottawa, based on last night in a long season, I think Winnipeg could end up as the seventh place without Liney.
You know what? Based on the last two games, for sure. I watched the Calgary game they played to open their season, and they got behind early. They were really good in that game, but Liney played in that game, and he played out of his mind.
Exactly.
And can see what a difference, you know, if he plays at that level, what a difference he makes. Because that team last night that we saw, and I'm not buying, you know, there was talk during the broadcast, you know, about travel and back-to-back nights. I mean, we're three games into a season. They played four games in the last 10 months.
Yeah.
We're talking, and they travel from, you know, to Toronto, which is a 2-hour flight from Winnipeg, and played a 7 o'clock game and finished by 9:30. They would have been in Ottawa, 45-minute flight.
Yeah,
I mean, it takes a while to get to the airport.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. I think we're talking about fatigue and back-to-back games at this point. That seems a little early for that excuse.
I agree. Even, you know, if you did too much surf and turf on the charter, JR, maybe a little bit too much red wine.
Didn't digest.
You got to tip it off. No, come on. Also, to the Winnipeg Jets, kind of pointing out though, in the line A. Like, you know, Stastny obviously is on his last legs. You have to, in injury, elevate a guy like Matthew Perreault, right? I mean, that you start to understand. And also, and I know they play different positions, although Paul's hopped in a little bit. Who do you think's a better NHL hockey player right now, Nick Paul or Lowry?
I think they're both really good players.
Okay, because I'm going to say that only in that, and you start
I like Lowry.
Yeah, no, I like him, but here's my point is that you've often talked about this in your lower six. Here's a guy that makes $3 million a year as a 5-goal scorer.
Oh, okay,
That was only my point.
Does he make that much?
Yeah, $2.9 million on a 3-year deal, and I'm like, wow, like...
He plays a good, hard game.
He does. I love him for that. He's a foot soldier, you know, and then the allocation of money to guys that can't generate and for the squeeze that Winnipeg's had on them, and hey, there's lots of team building stuff, and I know he's very popular, but you know, you're looking at that, I'm thinking, man, wow, like Nick Paul to me is probably the better player right now.
Caleb writes, the difference between the young guys with the puck other than the vets that has me excited for the sell-off. The UND boys are coming. Hard not to be optimistic. The Sens are going to be the class of the East in a couple of years. That's from Caleb.
I don't think it's far-fetched. No, I don't. And, you know, as I said, we could by next fall and say, wow, what a genius old Smitty and Dorion ended up being. They've rolled in now Pinto and where's Sanderson at and a number of other players. No, it's very bright, but it's also a process to me that there's just certain things here. And like I say, it isn't a forcing of every young player, but what I want a layer of, especially on the back end at center ice, JR, is I want a progression here where, like I said, on the back end right now, Thomas Chabot's already good to go. Like, this guy, to me, is going to win a Norris Trophy someday. I got to start immersing some other players because at some point in the season, I assume that Branstrom's going to get a look. And if you don't even have Willannon yet, and by the time, you know, North Dakota ends, Bernard Docker is going to be close. Like, I want those other guys. I'm not going to try to immerse 4 or 5 defensemen. The same thing at center ice where, what, are you going to, you know, roll out that? That's not going to work down the middle.
Unsigned writes, I thought a timeout would have helped last night, could have helped settle the Sens down. So
I never felt like that, though, JR, watching the game. Like, I just didn't feel like, you know, oh, wow, like you're, you know, they're blowing your doors off. I didn't, you know, like I said, and Smith had used it on Saturday night, right, against the Leafs on a penalty kill.
Yes.
Which I, you know, and, you know, you get into those discussions and arguments. I usually leave that to the coaches personally. But I didn't feel like there was a point in that game. It's like, wow, you got to get that. And for me, most times, I look at the second period with the long change or you end up either in a PK situation or you end up now with the icing where, you know, you've gotten guys on that aren't going to be able to make a change here and you want to prevent a goal.
All right, more on the game and the thoughts of Pierre McGuire when he joins us in about 10 minutes or so. I want to touch upon the other big sports news of the morning, and that is what the Blue Jays have reportedly done, and that is sign free agent outfielder George Springer to the biggest contract in club history, a 6-year deal, a $150 million, an average $25 million per season. This is one that's been rumored that the Blue Jays have been interested in this player throughout the entire offseason. They and the New York Mets were said to be the front runner, and it looks like the Blue Jays have landed Springer. Here is ESPN Baseball insider Jeff Passan on how the Jays did it.
The Toronto Blue Jays needed to land a big fish this offseason. They had missed on Liam Hendricks. They had missed on DJ LeMahieu. They had missed right. They had missed left. Francisco Lindor went to the Mets. This is the offseason when the Blue Jays want to make the leap from a contending team in the AL East to a contending team for the World Series. And adding George Springer in center field, it was the perfect marriage. He brings power, he brings speed, he brings playoff experience, and he rounds out a lineup that already with Bo Bichette, Lourdes Gurriel, Vladimir Guerrero Jr., Kevin Biggio, Teoscar Hernandez, and others, is one of the best, if not the best, in the American League.
Wow. Okay, so there we go. I had not thought about it in those terms. It'd be interesting because I saw some Blue Jay observers suggest last night with signing Springer that maybe Grichuk could be a guy they end up dealing at the end of the day. And I'm not sure how much you could get him, but Springer's a real good player.
Yeah.
Although, you know, World Series MVP, got a text here. Let's see here. The Jays are now selling steel trash cans with their logo on it at $49.95. Great deal. So the jokes are already out there about how much of his stat line in his time in Houston was attributable to the cheating.
Yeah,
it's funny how he never really got lumped in as much as Altuve, right? And Carlos Correa, who took the biggest Altuve in particular. Springer was never really the guy that was in the middle of it, but he was on the team at the end of the day.
Yeah.
And Alex Bregman, he was another big
Bregman,
one, too.
Because
somebody came out with the stats of the amount of bangs per at-bat through the entire season. Somebody went through every single game.
What, bangs per at-bat?
She bangs.
Through the season. On how many they got, and I'm just trying to look it up now.
I'm going to baseballreference.com and looking for bangs per at-bat.
Is that a stat?
Yeah.
This is something that the Jays must have been looking at, though, guys, right? His home and away splits along with what is recovery. And he ended up having, was it 14 home runs in the shortened season last
year?
Yes,
yeah. You know, he had 39 homers in 2019 when they last played a full season.
Were they cheating in that season?
No, it had come to it came to light before that season.
Okay.
No,
so
hang on. No, it was after last season, right?
Oh, okay.
Because last year was the whole storyline. Remember last year's spring training before they called it off and the season didn't begin.
That's right.
Was about
That's
Altuve
right.
was getting booed at
That's
spring
right.
training.
And how thankful not having fans in the stadium.
Exactly.
That this would have been tough. Yeah. Okay.
Exactly.
Okay.
So anyway, that's a big free agent signing.
Yeah.
For the Blue Jays, still a couple of big. Trevor Bauer is a huge name that is still out there. The number one. Starter still out on the boards and board, and there's still some people out there suggesting that maybe there's money in the budget for the Blue Jays to sign him as well, which would really, I mean, they need another arm really at the end of the day.
What do you think the ownership side now? Rogers is the owner of the Jays, right?
Yeah.
Now, from their perspective, JR, is this just a boost in the interest and the TV ratings if you can't have fans? But I mean, pretty bold move.
Well,
for
it's a long term thing.
Right?
You signed the guy for 6 years, so you're not, you know, the no fans in the stands is a short term thing. You hope,
For sure.
You know, beyond your hope. No more than maybe half a year this
year. Yeah, still credit to them, though. I mean, you know, for a lot of sports franchises right now and whatever that is. And like I said, this just feels like, I wouldn't say the one-off season when they brought in Reyes and made the Dickey trade. You're kind of like, okay. But, you know, certainly when they ended up making the Price trade, and I know that was during the season, but all of a sudden that was the place to be. You had to get to a Blue Jays game. And after seeing a signing like that, I'm sure lots of the bandwagoners like myself would be interested in baseball again.
As you said, you know, if this was a normal time, their ticket office would be ringing off the hook.
Big time.
So not sure where that all stands. Right, I'm not sure if they're selling tickets right now.
Do you think there's any behind the scenes thought of this would also be a way if you're trying to generate a new stadium? I mean, it certainly, to my mind, it always helps, JR, when you have a good product. If you're able to put a little more pressure, and when you're top of mind in a market, you know, which is very competitive right now with the Raptors and Leafs, I wonder if that is part of the goal.
Well, I mean, it's not going to be publicly funded. We already know that.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I think the last plan I saw from Rogers was that they were prepared to bankroll a new stadium. It's still a matter of, you know, where are they going to do it? Are they going to do it on the footprint of the Rogers Center? Because it's just not a whole lot of land, space downtown to do it. And if you're going to do that, you know, you don't have enough time to build it in an off season.
Yeah.
Where are you going to play in the meantime?
No, for sure. To your point, I know when you get into a term, okay, it's going to be privately funded. But any of these deals that involve any kind of, you know, breaks on taxes, maybe a little help with land deals, you know, there's a lot of things that either federal or provincial governments or cities do for a team.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
A few extra phone calls to your local MP never hurts.
No.
Especially
when
the team is going good. All right, a little past 8. We'll take a break. The latest news is on the way. We'll run down a very busy NHL scoreboard. Jack Hughes. Tell you what, looks like a totally different player year two to year one. He had a pair of goals last night. The Devils beat the Rangers. We'll go through all the hockey stuff, including more on the Sens. 4-3 overtime loss to the Jets with Pierre Maguire, who will join us next on TSN 1200.